Okay, so this is my first conference, which is related to global clusters, and I noticed that you people are used to a lot of abbreviations. So I could start out with using a lot of abbreviations as well, but I think that my talk will become a bit too complicated. The brief outline of my talk is as follows. I will introduce you to X-ray bursts. I will show you what radius expansion X-ray bursts are, and the rest of my talk is devoted to how I determine the peak luminosities of the bursts and whether they can be used as standard candles. Now here I show you a plot of an X-ray burst. Here's the top is the count rate versus time in seconds. Fortunately, it doesn't come out well. And the bottom shows the hardness, which is the ratio of the count rates in two energy bands. And as you see in the light curve, X-ray bursts are spikes. They show fast rise in the order of a few seconds, and they show an exponential like decay on the order with durations of the order of few seconds to 2 minutes. And in the hardness, you see that during the rise, the spectra harden, and then during the decay, they soften, which is attributed to heating and cooling of the neutron star. The burst emission is best described by black body radiation, the temperature of a few keV, and black body radii of the order of 10 kilometers. The total energy release is typically between 10 to the 39 and 10 to the 40 ergs. And if you do a back of the envelope calculation, the recurrence size of the bursts are in the order of hours to days. And these bursts, or this kind of bursts, have been clearly shown to be thermonuclear runaways from the neutron star. So on the here I show you black body fits to time-resolved X-ray spectra, and here is a typical X-ray burst from one of the global cluster sources. The top panel shows you the count rate fraction of time, then the bolometric black body luminosity, black body temperature, and the black body radius. And as you can see, the spectra show first heating and then cooling of the neutron star. Now, if the burst luminosity reaches the Eddington limit, the photosphere of the neutron star is lifted up due to the radiation pressure. And you can see that in the right panel, you see the black body radius increases. Well, the Eddington luminosity is supposed to be a constant, so if the radius increases, the temperature drops. So radius expansion burst can be recognized by a drop in the temperature and increase in the radius. Now, if the expansion is so large, then the temperature can drop out of the X-ray band. So the flux in the X-ray band drops as well, as can be seen in the light curve. So it looks as a sort of precursors in the light curves, but that's just due to the huge radius expansion. Now, before going to the results, I want to give you a very brief history of work which preceded my work. X-ray bursts were discovered independently by two groups, and one of these sources was happened to be in the globular cluster. Jan van Paradijs soon thereafter suggested that the mean peak luminosities of X-ray bursts is standard candle, and with that he determined distances to the burst sources and black body radii, which came out to be sort of in the same range as 10 kilometers. Well, 3 years afterwards, he realized that burst sources in global clusters are important because the distance can be determined independently. But however, he realized that the peak fluxes varied appreciably, so the assumption of standard candle was may not be a viable assumption. what Lewin suggested to use the brightest bursts, but then you still don't know if there are even brighter bursts possible. So it was, however, realized that radius expansion bursts reach a kind of critical luminosity, and these may be used as standard candles. Now, as Josh mentioned, there are 13 persistently bright or sporadically bright sources in 12 globular clusters, and 12 of these burst sources show burst, which I listed here. Here are the historical names, and here are the globular clusters. Now, for our work, we really re-evaluated the distances to these globular clusters by using the mean observed magnitude of the horizontal branch stars in these globular clusters. But we followed the prescription given by Harris, and we used the parameter values. We extract them either from the Harris catalog or from the recent literature. We determine the distance modulus that gives you the distance, and all in a homogeneous derived way. This is a big table. So what we did was we analyzed all bright bursts seen from global cluster sources, either seen with the Babcock's Whitefoot cameras or the RXTE, and we complemented the burst information by going through the whole literature. So we first determined the peak flux of each burst, of all the bright bursts. We determined whether they were rate expansion or not. And for our final peak fluxes, we used either the brightest burst when there is no radius expansion, when there are no radius expansion bursts seen for in one source. If there is one radius expansion seen, with one instrument, we just use the peak flux. If there are more radius expansion seen with one instrument in one source, we use the mean. And finally, if there were more radius expansion bursts seen with different instruments, we use the average, and with a third sign, I note which burst we used to compute the final peak fluxes. Now, given the distance, we determined you can compute the peak luminosities during the X-ray burst, and the filled circles are the radius expansion burst. The triangles are the burst for which no radius expansion has been seen. And if you exclude this source, which is a high inclination source, and the burst emission may have been either shielded or absorbed partly by the accretion disk, you sort of see that they more or less, well, they more or less reach, seem to reach one value. However, well, before stating that they may be standard candles, you have to take a few steps back. First of all, there are two caveats. We assume the burst emission is black body. Well, that doesn't seem to be true, because electron scattering dominates in the neutron star atmosphere, which changes the opacities there, and therefore the radiation which comes out doesn't look like a black body. So the bolometric corrections you use in the end may not be the right one. Second, the maximum luminosity. Well, we assume that the maximum luminosity is also the peak luminosity you see from the neutron star, which may not be true. Well, apart from the high inclination systems I mentioned, which may reach different peak fluxes, I want to go back to one of my previous few graphs.
seen it.
And note here, well, this is a radius expansion burst, and the luminosity is supposed to be constant, but you see that the luminosity still seems to be increasing during the final contraction of the burst. So there are caveats to bear in mind. Well, the second step is do all radius expansion X-ray bursts from one system reach the same peak? And the second, well, the next step is do all X-ray bursts from the sample, a radius expansion X-ray burst from the same sample, do they reach the same peak? Well, observations prior to XTE and our Bepperstokes Watford Kammer observations for 18-20-30 show that they all reach this work, well, the peak luminosities during radius expansion bursts were consistent with the same luminosity, so we're happy there. For you, 17-22-30, we found a lot of bursts with the Watford cameras, and I show them here at the bottom. And these are also consistent with reaching one peak flux. Then there is work by Exosat and SAT3 on many, or on many bursts from non-globular cluster sources. And at that time, well, it was found that they all reach the same, the radius expansion bursts reach the same peak luminosity. However, the more sensitive XTE observations have shown that for the non-globular cluster sources, that they found that the peak fluxes from radius expansion burst to radius expansion burst differed significantly with with standard deviations up to 10%. And moreover, they're supposed by Galloway and Chakrabarty, and they showed that in one of these global cluster sources, there was one radius expansion burst which reached a peak flux which was about two times higher than six other radius expansion bursts. So we are a bit unhappy there. However, well, we need more first to see if this also applies to the other global cluster bursts. Well, as I noted before, well, they all seem to reach more or less the same. Well, they all more or less seem to reach the same peak luminosity, and we concluded that within about 15%, they reach the same peak flux, and they can be used as approximate empirical standard candles. How long do we have? Okay. Now you can compute the Eddington limit for either for hydrogen poor material or neutron star or hydrogen rich material using a 1.4 solar mass neutron star. The upper limit of the band is the Heeling Eddington limit for large radius expansion bursts, and this is for and the lower limit is for tiny radius expansion bursts due to the gravitational redshift. And as you can see, our mean peak limit for radius expansion burst is consistent with the Eddington limit for hydrogen poor material. I want to stop there. Yeah, I'm done. Yeah.
Well, as you showed in your last view graph, I mean, that it seems as if there are two groups of systems, and I think that ties in with what Lee said before, is that perhaps half of the systems might be ultra-compact systems and therefore have mainly helium and hydrogen poor.
Well, what you note, I've stated that in my paper, but there are a few things here. I mean, these are burst sources which didn't show race expansion bursts, so the actual, well, the peak luminosity reached for race expansion bursts could be even higher. Second, this is the high inclination system, and it is known for non-globular cluster burst sources that the race expansion bursts reach different peaks. So we are more or less left with one, which is consistent with both.
But the point I actually want to make is that in the galactic disk, this is even more interesting because it's a potential way of getting the helium abundance. And since we now believe that many of these systems are intermediate mass systems for the descendants, we expect a wide range of helium abundance in, for example, in Cygnus X2, your favorite system, we would expect a mass fraction of at least 70% in helium. Okay. So, do you have any comment on that?
Well, I must say that the race expansion bursts, the bursts from this system, are quite long, which indicates that they must contain at least, they must be hydrogen rich, whereas the limit they reach seem to be the helium Eddington limit. But it could be that the hydrogen is blown off during the burst, so that it can still reach the helium Eddington limit. I don't know if that answers your question.
Are there other questions or comments?
It's really not a question, Eric. It's more of a comment. I mean, for those who study the X-ray galactic globular clusters and the X-ray luminosity function, I think this is a result people should pay attention to, because it's telling us that the Eddington limit for neutron stars might well be 4 by 10 to the 38 ergs per second. I think we'll see luminosity functions maybe from Aronov in here. They've all disappeared, so they missed the punchline. We'll tell them later. When you look at extragalactic X-ray luminosity functions, the question is always, where is the break between neutron stars and black holes? And this result says that neutron stars are fully capable of at least having, at times, brightnesses of 4 by 10 to the 38, so one has to be careful at drawing that boundary. People, I want to get the message you aren't here. So.
Yeah, but these luminosities are only reached during very short instances.
Yeah, there can be accretion rates this high. So neutron stars are easily accommodated. Or as cautions are what you call black holes. Any other questions?